Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Between 2013 and 2017, more than 90% of bull kelp forests were lost along 217 miles of Northern California's coastline. Bull kelp is a type of seaweed that offers protection and shelter for young fishes, crabs, sea stars, and other sea creatures. So what explains this massive loss? Well, purple sea urchin populations exploded between 2014 and 2015. They ate all the kelp, and the red abalone starved. Today's guest, environmental scientist Dr. Laura Rogers Bennett, says we're in uncharted territory. We have never seen purple sea urchins at these densities before. Dr. Rogers Bennett is the lead author of a study published in the journal Scientific Reports. Scientists from the University of California, Davis, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife used two decades of kelp ecosystem monitoring data to chronicle the catastrophic shift in 2014 from a robust bull kelp forest to a barren of purple sea urchins. Similar impacts are being observed in kelp forests from Baja California to Alaska. So what explains this? What is the impact of climate change and warming oceans on the deforestation of kelp? How is this affecting ocean life? And what can be done to bring back these incredible kelp forests? Dr. Laura Rogers Bennett is a senior environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. Based at the Bodega Bay Field Office at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory, Dr. Rogers Bennett works primarily in kelp forest ecosystems throughout the state of California, with a focus on abalone populations. She conducts research to inform the restoration of kelp forest ecosystems, including the fisheries they once supported. And Dr. Rogers Bennett joins us from Bodega Bay, California. Hi, Dr. Rogers Bennett. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, this has gotten a lot of attention because it is so dramatic. Again, 90% of giant bull kelp forests have been devoured by these urchins. How alarmed are you and other scientists by these findings?
I think we were very alarmed and taken by surprise with all of the declines that happened so rapidly. In Northern California, we are used to having our robust kelp forests in the near shore. There's a lot of recreational activities, a lot of tourism activities that take place. And this has traditionally been a region that has had a very stable bull kelp forest. And this event really took us all by surprise.
Let's talk a little bit about the importance of these forests. Now, I was just looking at some photos underwater, but if you take walks along the beach, chances are you've seen these bull kelp. They've got that kind of long, narrow, it almost looks like a mini pole, and it's like kind of brown. So tell us more about these bull kelp forests and, you know, why they're so important.
Yes, well, kelp forests are very much like the underwater equivalent of our redwood forests here in Northern California. They're a foundation species, which means they provide the homes and food for a lot of the animals that live in the ocean. They provide homes for fishes, sea stars, crabs, octopus, all kinds of organisms that live in the nearshore kelp forest. You see seabirds diving there. Sometimes whales will come into the nearshore. So these are very important regions for our marine life. On land, we have something very similar, of course, with the redwood trees providing habitat. We all are familiar with all the animals that live within the forest, the birds and squirrels, et cetera. So what we're seeing in the bull kelp is an amazing algal species that is able to grow very, very quickly. It can grow in a couple of months 50 feet. So these are an annual species that are very productive in our region, and they're able to grow much faster than many other organisms. We often think of corn as being very fast-growing 6 or 8 feet in a couple of months, but bull kelp is growing from a tiny little sporophyte up to the surface of the water, which in some cases is 60 feet.
Wow, that's amazing. So if you are lucky enough to be underwater, it does look like a forest. And so given what has happened, losing over 90% of these forests, it's as if, when you're saying it's like trees in a forest, it's as if all the trees have disappeared.
Exactly. If you can imagine the equivalent on land, it would be just that. If we had gone from San Francisco Bay Area all the way up to the Oregon border and lost 90% of our redwoods, there would be an immediate awareness that people would have about the devastation of that. And I think that we would be springing to action with remediation and restoration plans and a lot of the resources that we would need to do that. But since this is occurring underwater, it's much less well known, but yet the impacts for our region and our marine resources that the bull kelp forests support have been just as devastating.
So this is happening from San Francisco all the way up to the Oregon border?
That's correct. And traditionally, the Sonoma and Mendocino County coastlines have been really the heart of the bull kelp forest. So we have most of our bull kelp is in that region, and so that's the part that has been hit the hardest and has lost all of that resource.
So if you can visualize this forest underwater and all of the animals, the creatures that depend on the forest, this kelp forest, either for protection or from rough storms, what is happening to these creatures now that the kelp forests aren't there?
Well, that's just it. You know, when we, as divers, go diving in these kelp forests, the visual images that we're seeing are just stunning. Mm. If you're on the bottom and looking through the water column up through that lush brown algal forest, you see the light trickling down through the blades. It's really stunning. I'm a diver, and I dive all over the world, and some of my favorite dives are local here in Northern California. They're just beautiful. Looking on the bottom, you can see anemones, and we have this rich diversity of sea stars. We have small crab and all kinds of snails. So the fish are hiding in and amongst the leaves. The baby fish, baby rockfish, are using these kelp forests as their nurseries. So these are very important systems, and what we're seeing now is that many of the organisms that use the kelp forest are starving or have no place to live, and so their populations are also declining.
Wow. So this is really affecting the entire ecosystem.
This is really a whole ecosystem impact, and what we say is that this has really been an ecosystem collapse.
Let's talk about how we got here. In the study that you worked on, you all write about the perfect storm. The bull kelp ecosystem surveys reveal the timing and the magnitude of a series of events, what you call the perfect storm, and that led to the unprecedented decline of the kelp forest and the animals, plants, and ecological benefits it supports. Dr. Rogers-Bennett, we have some time. So let's go over what has happened since 2013, and if you can explain to us what you know based on all the research you've done, you know, we would greatly appreciate it. So in 2013, we had sea star wasting disease killing mass numbers of sea stars, which is a purple sea urchin predator. Explain to us what happened there.
That's right. What we've seen along the entire Pacific coast is a disease of our sea stars. We think it may be viral in origin, but there's still a lot of work being done on that. This disease has impacted sea stars from Baja California, Mexico, all the way up into Alaska, and it's a very wide, broad-scale impact. That was the first impact that we saw in our region, and what we were able to see when we were diving and doing our annual monitoring work was the first thing we saw was sea stars almost looked like their skin was melting. They looked very diseased and sick, and what we could see is that those numbers started to decline immediately. One of the most important species that is a predator of sea urchins is our big sunflower star. Those can be sometimes 3 feet across. These are huge stars. They have more than 20 arms, and they used to be very common in our area. And following the disease, that one species has now gone locally extinct. We haven't been able to find in our surveys a sunflower star in the past 4 years. So that was the first clue that we had that something major was happening in the kelp forest. And that was pre-setting the system for what happened in the future years.
What else can you tell us about what causes this disease?
We don't have a good sense of what causes the disease. And there are still a number of people who work with marine pathology and marine diseases, and they have been working hard to think about whether this disease was present in the system before 2013 or whether this was new. We don't have a good sense, but many species of stars were impacted. We had some of the common stars that people are aware of, the okra star, which you frequently find on pier pilings, many of those have had declines in their numbers, big declines, as well as the hardier stars like the bat stars that we're also familiar with that come in a range of beautiful colors from oranges, reds, into the grays. They're just a beautiful star. So even those have been impacted, but they are starting to come back now.
And these sea stars, I mean, they play so many important roles. They're just beautiful to begin with, but they keep the purple urchin numbers in check, right? So can you talk about that and how important that is?
Yes. So in our system, we have a top predator as a sunflower star. As I said, they're very large, and they can move quite quickly for a sea star, and they can eat purple urchin whole. So urchin, of course, have those sharp spines on them, and there are only a few animals that can really eat them. Wolf eels can eat them, and crab can sometimes eat them. So in our region, we don't have any sea otters. Sea otters are much more common in the Monterey area, south of San Francisco and central California. So our region doesn't have sea otters, but we used to have the sunflower stars.
It's kind of amazing to think about these kind of flat, colorful, beautiful starfish, sea stars, starfish, eating these spiky purple sea urchins.
Yes, they're quite incredible. They can they actually remove their stomach from their mouth and surround what they're eating and gobble them up.
Wow. Wow. Today we are speaking with Dr. Laura Rogers Bennett, a senior environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. Dr. Rogers Bennett works primarily in kelp forest ecosystems throughout the state of California, and we just got some pretty shocking news. Between 2013 and 2017, more than 90% of bull kelp forests were lost from San Francisco all the way up to Oregon. That this is a very important seaweed that protects and shelters young fishes and many sea creatures. But purple sea urchin populations have exploded, and they've eaten all the kelp. And as a result, the red abalone have starved. It's really just completely changed the marine ecosystem. So, okay, so we talked about the sea star wasting disease in 2013. And as a result, there aren't enough sea stars to eat these purple sea urchins. And then from 2014 to 2017, we had a marine heat wave and an El Nino event that warmed the near shore ocean. Remind us what happened during those years.
Yes. So we are just beginning to learn more about marine heat waves. I think we're all familiar with heat waves on land. It's a prolonged period of time where the air temperature is very, very warm, and we have some good definitions for what is considered a heat wave. But in the marine environment, we've only just been studying these phenomenon, and what we have now is a definition from some of my colleagues in Australia, where they've been able to define the intensity and the duration of what a marine heat wave is. So we have this definition now, and the massive event that took place in our part of the world in 2014 and 2015 was just that. It was a very warm, anomalously warm ocean conditions lasting for a very long time, and that has had impacts throughout our marine ecosystem, not only in the nearshore kelp forests, like our paper has been describing, but there have been a whole series of papers talking about things like species moving from the south to the north. Some of my colleagues at the Bodega Marine Lab have been quantifying many of those impacts. We're also seeing the animals out far from shore, seabirds, seals, all those animals were heavily impacted by the marine heat wave as well.
Can you explain, because the climate crisis is just so massive, can you explain what else happens when we have a marine heat wave?
Yes. So, as you know, the climate crisis means that our globe is going to be warming, and most of our globe is actually ocean. So the more we can learn about the impacts of what marine heat waves might be doing in our ocean ecosystems, the better off we're going to be in terms of thinking through what kinds of management scenarios or restoration scenarios we need to put into play. So what we have in our region is this marine heat wave that really came through and changed the amount of nitrogen that our productive ecosystem usually holds in the water. So when water temperatures are 14, 13, or 12 degrees, we're able to see that we have lots of nitrogen dissolved in the water, and the bull kelp can do that amazing 50 feet of growth in a couple of months. But when there are warm waters, there is much less nitrogen in the water, and the bull kelp really suffers.
Mm. What questions do you still want to answer when it comes to how warming waters affects ocean life and the ecosystems?
We still don't know a lot about how warm water is going to be impacting our resources and some of the things that we care about in the near shore. One of the big questions that we have is how does warming water interact with sea urchin recruitment and baby sea urchins? So is warming ocean conditions, is that a trigger for more intense sea urchin recruitment events? That's something that we still don't know. We also don't know the links between warming ocean and diseases. We need to study that more. Mm-hmm. There are also a suite of things that we need to study in terms of the bull kelp life history. What happens? How long would a sporophyte need to be exposed to warm water for it to be impacted? Is it just a short heat shock? Would it be able to survive that or not? So there are so many things that, and so much work we need to do in the oceans.
Do you have the resources that you need to conduct all of these studies and do all of this work?
There are very few people working in the nearshore kelp forests, especially here on the North Coast. Hmm. And we need a lot more resources, especially given this environmental collapse that we've seen. We need expertise. We need funding. We need all kinds of people being directed to this area of research. And I think that what we need most of all is to think about getting the public more aware and involved. And programs like this are very useful for spreading the word about the alarming conditions that we've been finding on the North Coast.
Right. And luckily, this is getting attention. I first learned about it on the cover of the San Francisco Chronicle maybe about a month or so ago, and then have read so many stories online. Before we go to break, Dr. Rogers Bennett, those resources that you're talking about and the money and the bodies to do this research, obviously that needs to come from government. Have you heard from politicians? I mean, do they understand what's happening here so they can take action on this, so you can do the work that you need to find these answers?
Well, I think that like most work in the ocean, it's going to require many of us to be involved. It's going to require federal, state government. It's going to require universities to be involved, NGOs, public-private partnerships, companies, and there are a whole suite of organizations that are going to need to come together to address this climate crisis.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Laura Rogers Bennett, Senior Environmental Scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. Dr. Rogers Bennett is based at the Bodega Bay Field Office at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory, where she primarily works in kelp forest ecosystems throughout the state with a focus on abalone populations. And it would be great if you can read about this and, you know, share it with people who care about the ocean. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. We also have links there to the study that is taking a look at what's happening to these kelp forests. Between 2013 and 2017, more than 90% of bull kelp forests and 96% of red abalone were lost along 217 miles of Northern California's coastline. So that's San Francisco to Oregon. And this kelp is really important because it offers protection and shelter for so many sea creatures, crabs, sea stars, young fishes. But what's happening is the purple sea urchin populations have exploded. And they're eating all of the kelp. They eat it so fast. And then, unfortunately, in the process, the red abalone starved. So after a break, we'll continue talking about why this is happening and what it will take to bring back bull kelp forests. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. And today we are speaking with Dr. Laura Rogers Bennett, Senior Environmental Scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. Dr. Rogers Bennett is the lead author of a study published in the journal Scientific Reports. Scientists from UC Davis and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife used two decades of kelp ecosystem monitoring data to chronicle the catastrophic shift in 2014 from a robust bull kelp forest to a barren of purple sea urchins. They've basically eaten all of the kelp, and in the process, the red abalone have starved. So, Dr. Rogers Bennett, we talked about the sea star disease in 2013. The marine heat wave happened between 2014 and 2017. And then in 2015, we saw massive populations of purple sea urchins exploding. So talk to us about that and how it happened.
Yes, so as you say, we saw this increase in purple sea urchins, more 30 times more than we had ever seen before. And when we were conducting our monitoring surveys, we lay out transect tapes in underwater and use scuba divers. We swim along the tapes and count and measure all the things along this transect. And what we saw was that the purple urchin were moving in and recruiting into the population, and those purple urchin population numbers just soared.
And I've looked at some pictures, and it looks like the ocean floor is just covered in these purple sea urchins.
Yes, and they are very good at eating up all the fleshy algae that's there. They can chew through the stipes or the base of the kelps. They can eat the short red algae that will only grow a couple of feet or a couple of inches off the bottom. And what we've been seeing is that the devastation has been so great that not only are they eating the fleshy algae, but they're also eating through some of our algal species that are calcified. So these are traditionally thought to be very resistant to grazing because they're almost like a pink paint. They're called crustose coralline algae, and they are sometimes on the rocky surfaces, and you can see it in the shallow waters along our coast. That pink paint is actually being eaten through as well.
Wow. So what effect does that have?
One of the things that this has really highlighted for us is that our system has really reached this tipping point. So when you talk about climate change and multiple stressors impacting ecosystems, one of the things that we know about in ecology is if there is a number of stressors that are too much for the system, we can actually reach a threshold or a tipping point, and that system can switch from kelp forest, which is a very species-rich system, into urchin barrens, which really has very few species except for sea urchins. And one of the reasons why we felt it was so important to work on this paper and get this example out is that we're still learning what is it that is enough of a stressor to tip a system beyond its capability to bounce back. And that tipping point is what we describe in this paper, which has happened here on the North Coast.
How do other sea creatures interact with purple sea urchins?
Well, many of those sea creatures are vulnerable to being eaten. Mm. If they're very small, they can be eaten. If they're an algal species, they can be targeted. But even some of the sponge, some of the bryozoans, some of the other animals that are living on the rock, they will just be scoured away. So that's what we've been seeing, is that the main impact now is that there's widespread starvation in the kelp forest. And how we know this is we really look at some of our sensitive species, really our canaries in the coal mine, and those would be the abalone species. Abalone are strict herbivores or vegetarians. They just eat the algae, and when that algae is gone, they only have a certain number of months or a year before they can starve to death. And so what we saw in 2016 and 2017 was the beginnings of a mass starvation event for our abalone species in the region. So as you know, the North Coast is home to the recreational red abalone fishery. Mm-hmm. It's a very important economic driver for many of our coastal communities, particularly in Sonoma and Mendocino counties, up into southern Humboldt. And what we see in these local communities is this huge decline in the red abalone fishery impacting these communities. And the decline of the red abalone populations was so dramatic that in 2018, the Fish and Game Commission here in California voted to close the fishery, and it's still closed today due to this mass starvation event.
And according to the report, this closure in 2018 of the recreational abalone fishery, we're talking about a lot of money here, an estimated $44 million.
Absolutely.
So what are you hearing from abalone fishermen and fisherwomen? How are they dealing with this?
Well, what we're hearing and what we're experiencing as divers ourselves, and I'm a recreational abalone fisherman as well, and what we're hearing is the heartbreak and devastation that people are seeing. They're seeing rows and rows of dead abalone shells, kelp forest that they're used to diving in. We would carry a small knife on the side of our legs to cut through the kelp in case you got tangled. And we haven't needed to use those. There's just very, very little kelp in the system right now. And what we're seeing is that for myself, my son and daughter also dive for abalone, and this has been something that's been important in our family, and I'm no longer able to go abalone diving, and I think that that experience is being replicated throughout the 36,000 recreational abalone fishermen that come out every year to the North Coast. They're all really devastated that this environmental disaster has struck a resource that we love and care about here on the North Coast.
Dr. Rogers Bennett, given the work that you do as a senior environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region, did you ever expect you would see something like this?
Never, never. I was you know, diving like many of us on the coast, and just expected that our beautiful bull kelp forest would always be there and provide the ecosystem functions that we care about, provide for recreational opportunities, for tourism, for diving, for underwater photography, for kayaking, all of the things that that we enjoy doing, abalone cook-offs. So this is something that was really, no one knew was coming, and was really devastating for us.
And just the thought, I love snorkeling, and I love just knowing that there's this life underwater when we're all living our lives and, you know, doing a lot of damage to the planet. There's just this amazing world under the water, and it's so great to be able to just disappear, and you're a visitor, and you just watch this world happen, you know, fish chasing each other, and it's just amazing under there. And just to think that now all of these bull kelp forests are gone, that's just a horrible thing to even think about, you know, in addition to what you said, but just the thought that this whole ecosystem has been affected so negatively.
It is. It's been devastating in terms of the entire ecosystem collapsing, along with the recreational red abalone fishery. We've also had a collapse of the North Coast commercial red sea urchin fishery, and that sounds a little strange because you say, well, what, there's a lot of sea urchins out there, which is true, but they need food in order to be marketable and harvestable. So when we now take some red sea urchin and bring them back and cut them open, they're empty inside. So the roe that makes them so delicious and marketable is just not there. And that's been another economic impact to our coast on this important commercial fishery, where the commercial fishermen and fisherwomen are really having a hard time making a living.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Laura Rogers-Bennett, Senior Environmental Scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. Dr. Rogers-Bennett is based at the Bodega Bay Field Office at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Laboratory. She works primarily in kelp forest ecosystems throughout the state with a focus on abalone populations, and she's the lead author of a new study published in the journal Scientific Reports. And we're just learning that between 2013 and 2017, more than 90% of bull kelp forests and 96% of red abalone were lost along 217 miles of Northern California's coastline. So San Francisco all the way up to Oregon. And Dr. Rogers-Bennett says that we're really in uncharted territory here. Since you're talking about the Red Sea urchin, the one thing that I've been reading about in all of the articles about, in terms of a possible solution here, is to remove the purple urchins from the seafloor and then fatten them up so people can eat them. And I'm just trying to visualize, given how many there are, what do you think of that prospect and how would that work?
Yes, so one of the potential options that we have is, and we were talking earlier about this need for partnerships and for groups to come together, and one of the partnerships that's been formed has been the Kelp Ecosystem Landscape Partnership for Research, KELPR we call it, and the KELPR program has university, agency, NGOs, private citizens, all kinds of recreational, commercial divers involved in this program. And one of the groups in the program is very interested in the possibility of urchin ranching. So this would be the idea of bringing in empty, starving urchin, fattening them up with an algal-based feed, and then waiting until those roe develop and selling that in the marketplace. And this could create some sort of economic incentive for removing the urchin. So while not all the urchins are ranchable, it would really be mostly just the very large adult urchins would be ranchable. The idea is that if we can incentivize the removal of urchin, then we could have other uses for the small urchin that aren't ranchable, and then work with the ranchable ones to pay for the removal efforts or to contribute to the removal efforts. So there's a number of companies, I think, that are interested in this. One of them is Urchinomics, and they've developed an algal-based feed. But this is something that is being explored. We have some trials going on right now at the Bodega Marine Lab to see how this would work. How long would it take for urchins to become marketable? What is the taste and quality of the ranched urchins, and what densities and flows would be needed. So these are some important studies that we're going to need to be able to learn from so that we can know some marketable solutions. One of the questions I frequently get is, what about bringing sea otters into the picture? And what we find is that sea otters in Monterey area really are not eating these urchin because they are empty inside. Mm-hmm. So they're not really of a food value for us or the sea otters.
Well, I'm looking at the Urchinomics website. They have a really nice website. And some of the photos, I mean, they show a bull kelp forest from the surface of Ocean Cove in Northern California in 2012, and it's full of the sea surface is full of kelp, and that's 2012. And then in 2016, there's nothing on the surface. I mean, just nothing. And then they also have maps, and you can see a map of the bull kelp forest in 2012, and then 2016, it's completely gone. I mean, the photos and the graphs really bring this to life because it's so drastic.
They really do. And I think that the people who are out on the water every year, many of the divers, they are really the ones who are seeing this firsthand. And I think that that's one of the reasons why we're so keen to come and talk about these issues, is because not everyone goes underwater and mm-hmm. sees it. But when you do, it's really striking, the decline in the kelp.
So for people who want to get involved, since there's these companies like Urchinomics, I also found a website, the Noyo Center for Marine Science, and they have a whole center called Help the Kelp. You know, just how you can get involved, bull kelp recovery plan released. What can people do to get involved in this?
Yes, well, I would encourage folks to go to the Noyo Science Center. They are one of our key partners in the Kelper program. They are focused on education and outreach, as well as working with some of the commercial fishermen. So they are really focused on some potential solutions. They have been involved in getting some funding together to help pay for some urchin removal efforts. And some of our key partners in that kind of work are the commercial urchin fishermen. They have the equipment, the boats, and more importantly, the know-how for how to remove large numbers of urchin. We also have a really important role for former recreational abalone divers. They have been coming out with folks like the Watermen's Alliance to help support and remove urchin from particular sites in Mendocino and Sonoma County. You mentioned Ocean Cove. That's one of the important sites that urchin removal efforts have been conducted in Sonoma County. There's also been some removal efforts up in Mendocino County in Casper Cove. So these are areas where folks have been really banding together and working on solutions and working collaboratively. So I encourage people to take a look at the Gulf of the Farallones Association website as well, where you will see the bull kelp recovery action plan, which was put out earlier this spring. And I encourage people to talk with their state and federal representatives about these issues and see what's happening from the government side, as well as universities and, as I say, these NGOs.
And Dr. Rogers Bennett, how fast do the purple sea urchins multiply? So if they are along the Northern California coast from San Francisco to Oregon, are they going to continue to multiply, and how does that happen?
Yes, so sea urchins are amazing native species. They the urchins that are in great numbers right now are our purple sea urchins. They are this beautiful, brilliant purple color, and they have spines all over them. They're very well defended. They are amazing animals at being able to withstand starvation. So even though they've eaten themselves out of house and home, the adults are able to utilize dissolved organics or carbon in the water, so they can go into this sort of torpor or hibernation type state where they don't use a lot of energy and they're just hanging on and waiting for more food to come their way. They have this wide variety of things they can eat, from dead and dying things to living sponges or algae. So they also can be cannibalistic. So there's all kinds of amazing adaptations that purple urchin have. They have a larval stage where they are swimming in the water column, and they can travel for long distances and settle in different places. And what we're seeing now is that the purple urchin problem is very much on the increase. So we've had reports from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife that the purple urchins have really increased almost 80-fold up in southern Oregon and the Rocky Reef systems there. In the Monterey area, half of the sites that Reef Check, which is a wonderful group that works with recreational scuba divers to monitor reefs all around the world and rocky reefs in our region, they have been noting that 50% of the sites that used to have kelp in Monterey now are urchin barrens. So we're very concerned that this purple urchin issue is spreading throughout California, and I think that's why it's so important for us to take actions here, because if we are able to come up with some good solutions, we might be able to export those solutions to other places that may need it.
Dr. Rogers Bennett, because you brought up Oregon, there was an amazing story in the Associated Press reporting that 350 million urchins were recently counted on one Oregon reef, which is a more than 10,000% increase since last year. And in this story, Scott Groth, who's a scientist with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, said the same thing that you did. We're in uncharted territory. And he said, you can't just go out and smash these urchins. There are just too many.
There are too many. And I think that one of the goals that the Kelper program has and the bull kelp recovery plan has is not to go out and smash or remove all the purple urchin, because as you say, that would be impossible. But what we're trying to do is to create small pockets of defensible space where we're removing purple urchin from targeted coves to create a network of bull kelp recovery patches so that we can have these small kelp oases in a network along our coast. What we want to avoid is what's happened with our sunflower stars, and that is local extinction. We want to create these small pockets where we do have some bull kelp growth, and we can maintain the genetic diversity, we can maintain the spore production in these small kelp oases. And so I think that that is the strategy, rather than diluting our efforts and trying to harvest 350 million urchins, which is not going to happen.
Right. Wow. That's so many. Just briefly, Dr. Rogers Bennett, what are we seeing from Baja California to Alaska? How concerned are you about those areas?
I think we're very concerned about these areas, and I think this is where monitoring comes into play. We were able to document exactly which stressors came and what sequence and what duration, and able to describe the tipping point for our system, which was, as I said, a historically quite stable system, but many areas don't have a lot of monitoring going on, and so we're going to need to rely and beef up our monitoring along the coasts. There are important monitoring programs by universities named PSCO. That monitoring program is going to be one of our best defenses in terms of what's going on. We have the kelp forest monitoring program down in the Channel Islands, and that is going to be another important program that looks at changes in the system. So that, along with the Department of Fish and Wildlife monitoring program here on the North Coast in Sonoma and Mendocino counties, these are going to be critical programs to keep going if we're going to know about what's happening in our oceans and try and do some work to protect them.
Dr. Laura Rogers-Bennett is Senior Environmental Scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Marine Region. She's based at the Bodega Bay Field Office at the UC Davis Bodega Marine Lab, where she works primarily in kelp forest ecosystems throughout the state with a focus on abalone populations. And you can read the study that she authored in the journal Scientific Reports at Your Call Radio. She and her colleagues found that between 2013 and 2017, more than 90% of bull kelp forests were lost along 217 miles of Northern California's coastline. Dr. Rogers-Bennett, thank you so much for all of your work. Thanks for joining us, and we'd love to check in with you in a couple of months to find out what's happening and to get an update.
You're very welcome, and thanks for being concerned about our oceans.
Yes, thank you so much. And thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and David Latulip, our studio engineer. You can find more information about the show and find all of our One Planet shows at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call's One Planet series.